is what I got. And remember that loving is what I got.
Howdy, 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 all you pre-modcast listeners. We got a very exciting show for you. It's the most important show of the year, the metagame analysis. But first, I gotta introduce my co-host. I'm Mike Harris, joined by Andrew Walker.
Hey, guys.
And Jared Doucette.
Anything? Well, I guess deep down I'm feeling a little confused. I mean, suddenly you get married and you're supposed to be this entirely different guy. I don't feel different. I mean, take yesterday, for example. We were out at the Olive Garden for dinner, which was lovely, and I happened to look over at a certain point during the meal and see a waitress taking an order. And I found myself wondering what color her underpants might be. Her panties. Odds are they're probably just basic white cotton underpants, but I sort of think, well, maybe they're silk panties. Maybe it's a thong. Maybe it's something really cool that I don't even know about, you know? And I started feeling out, I thought we were in the trust tree in the nest. Were we not? Were we not?
Old school?
Yeah.
Yeah. You got your upcoming nuptials on the mind?
A little bit, you think? Yeah. No. Also, 20 years ago, that movie came out. So April of 2003. So.
Oh, God, yeah. I was still legal to buy booze. 20 years ago, I was like, I'm old.
I'm going to tell you something that I'm sure all your married with kids friends have told you.
You think about waitress's panties?
No, quite the opposite, actually.
Yeah.
Marriage does not change much at all.
I didn't think so. I already live with her, you know, it's not like this.
Exactly, because these days everybody lives with their fiancés, like... Marriage was, you know, the only thing that changed was that we got our dog the same weekend.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So it was like literally nothing else in life changes.
Yeah.
Kids, that's when things change.
I'm sure. Yeah. Well,
it is seriously, you wake up the next day after getting married and you're like, all right, let's go back to life.
Yeah. We actually just booked our honeymoon. So that was the
nice.
big change. We're going to spend a little over a week in Jamaica at this
honeymoon.
Yeah, at a sandals resort that is just opening up in May. So it'll be like brand new and everything should be pretty nice. It's not cheap, but like I've never done an all-inclusive before. So, but I just like the idea of just going.
Interesting.
I like the idea of just going there and not having to worry about like money anymore.
Keep it simple.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Just
absolutely.
There's like 10 different restaurants on the facility of the resort, and let's go paddleboarding, let's go ATVing today, let's go like floating down one of the two lazy rivers they have at this resort. Like, that sounds great. So
That's awesome.
Yeah.
You want as little stress as possible.
So we're both excited
we got a travel agent for our honeymoon because same thinking, like we didn't want to worry about, you know, figuring out reservations and flights and everything that's involved.
Where'd you go? Where'd you go for yours?
We did Italy and Greece.
Yeah, I think our options were that because we're getting married in December, so we want to do something warm. But if we were, it was either like do one right away or we wait until like the springtime and go to Europe. It was kind of like our two ideas. And we were just like, you know what, we're going to want to just go right away. And she's also an accountant. Uh-huh. She's an accountant. So, like, springtime gets busy for her, obviously.
We'd really be waiting
for the summer. So, it was just like, let's just go and just do it. And we're both excited about it. So, we're good to go. What about you?
Yeah.
What about you, Andrew? Where was yours?
Well, the reason I worked at sea so much was all the money you'd get and not have to pay, like, shit on shore because you didn't live anywhere. You just... crash on someone's couch.
Did you do a cruise?
No, I went to Tahiti. It was a shitload of money.
Wow.
Yeah, Tahiti. Oh,
the opposite side of the world. That's very cool.
Did a shark dive Jean-Michel Cousteau. What is that? Cousteau's son?
Or Jacques' son, yeah.
Yeah. His our dive master is his videographer whenever he goes to Tahiti. So
it
was
like, awesome.
That's cool.
That's nice. All right. So shall we step in to pick up some brews?
Sure. Let's go for it.
I'll go ahead and lead off because I'm following in your footsteps, Jared. I have not bought a Magic card in over a month.
Well, Well, I changed my streak. I finally broke it, and I have gone nuts on TCG, just buying stupid little stuff.
Oh, nuts, huh?
Yeah. I got like 18 packages on the way. They're all – it's a bunch of like tiny little stuff. I got inspired to go back and check out my set collections and try to finish some stuff. I should be finishing up my Homeland set. And alliances should be soon.
I'm sure the homelands cost a lot of money.
And no, you know what? Like, things have gone up recently. Like didgeridoo, I think, is the most expensive card. It's like
didgeridoo is the weird spike, because I think there was like a Minotaur set
exactly
recently.
There was, and so like that's where it kind of went up. And but otherwise, it's just a bunch of other little stuff. And I've also gotten re-back into the 7-point old school, like with the like it's a singleton format, so I'm just like buying like 5th and 6th copies of things to like put in like my old school deck, like so I could have those like those singleton decks just made, ready to go, and just done, like just cheap copies, like a bunch of revised stuff or whatever, just to like, you know, fill out these fun little
just
decks.
Fill out a singleton old school deck. awesome. Andrew, how about you?
Same thing in the starting point, didn't buy anything yet. I'm jonesing for some stuff after I saw some of the I think it was Tom or Aaron were showing me all the Friday Night Magic cards that they've printed up recently that are all original format, foil, this and that, like all spicy. Granted, I don't go for foils that much, so it didn't matter to me. I did go and buy some more. I bought some more dice. Yay! Needed a couple more colors that I didn't have, so I could track my
since they just came out with another set that has like the retro frames. A lot of cards are now in foil that didn't have that option before. So I've seen some people talking about that. But if that's your thing, more power to you.
The part that was weird was he was showing me some of the cards, and he flipped one over that was first in it was first printed in like Italy in 95 is what it said. And I'm like, no, the black bordered foreign revised were all 94 printings. So we went on a little dive for it. I found that I had a black bordered Bayou, which I understand why I didn't trade it, because it's Mangrove Swamp is the name of it, so that's awesome. But yeah, those were all printed in 94, so for some reason Wizards lists the card as first available in that language in 95. The only reason we could figure out why it came out, like the Italian revised, German and French revised came out in 94.
Right, the classic FBBs, the originals.
Yeah. They came out in late December 94. So, they were technically 94.
So they
I don't know. I was
fudged the year a little bit by a couple of days.
Yeah. I saw it. I'm like, that's an error. He's like, no.
Interesting.
Yeah. The first form printings, like you said, were the revised, and they were the Italian, French, and German. And then I think the next one was the fourth edition. Fourth edition got Spanish
was revised as well.
No,
there were four.
No, I think it was just three. I'm pretty sure it was just three.
Yeah,
it's weird.
No Spanish revised.
No
FBB.
Yeah,
no, because the
not until fourth edition.
I know the for the duel, the black border duels. Germany is the least printed. For I know guys who collect the cards, and they were trying to upgrade their black borders to be all German. That's why I couldn't trade that one away. It was just the name was cool.
Yeah, the German ones have a bit of a premium because there's less of them, and also they have awesome names. Like, they just sound cool.
The German language definitely. Yeah.
My favorite is the German. You guys are right. The German for the German for instant or interrupt maybe is like a Sponsenzauber. I was like, that's fantastic.
Lightning Bolt. Lightning Bolt is something great.
Blitzschlag.
Blitzschlag.
The Blitzschlag. That's what it is. Blitzschlag.
Yeah. I know that because that's
4-3.
That's one of my pride and joys is my FBB German lightning bolts.
Yep, I have those too. And I like whenever I look at like sell my FBBs, I'm like, I always look at those. I'm like, ah, they just look so clean. They just look great.
Not getting rid of them.
Yeah, they're just they're like, I have beta lightning bolts that I use for old school, but I think I like these German FBBs more. They just look so crisp. You know.
I actually got them before I even got into old school and pre-modern.
Yeah, great.
Because I was playing modern. And I was like, you know, if you could play whatever lightning bolt you want, I definitely want to get a black bordered old art thing.
Definitely.
And it was one of the best purchases I ever made because it gets you so much in old school.
What do you at the time? Go ahead.
At the time, I think it was like 2015, and I think they went for like $15 to $20 each.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good
one. Surprisingly, though, they haven't spiked that much.
No, they haven't. Yeah.
It's weird. The FBB stuff, like, it unless it's signed, always had a premium.
It was signed, and, it's jumped a lot.
You know, it when everything started spiking, it was really only the English printings that spiked.
Mm-hmm. I think the FBB market is so hard to gauge in general. Like, it's just you put stuff up on like the Facebook or Discord, and no one really knows what to pay because they know if they have a friend who in Europe, they can get the MKM price, and it's so much cheaper.
Right,
but in the States, there is a premium to pay. Like if you want to the easy shipping, because you can't get MKM to ship over here, which is a pain in the ass. Mm. But but it's so much
we're
cheaper.
All familiar with that?
Yeah. But the language choice,
because you'd have like back when we played during the era of pre-modern, it was always Japanese was the cards to get. Now it's not necessarily Asian market cards. It's like it's whatever people are in the mood for, really.
Oh yeah, totally.
Or you could be like Jared Saitakowski and get all the Korean cards and then not know what your cards do. That's always a good move. I play with him sometimes, and even he'll admit it. He'll goes, "Oh, I didn't know my card did that." I was like, "Yeah, that's that lecture, text."
That's amazing.
Yeah, but
do you know when Renaissance came
out? Awesome.
I'm trying to think. That was the only other set that
Renaissance was 94.
Four.
It was earlier in 94 because
what was Renaissance?
It was
basically like Chronicles ish.
Yeah, Chronicles.
Then it's got to be 95, I would think.
Maybe I'm wrong about
that.
It's
like Earnum's in it.
I thought that Renaissance came out before FBB Revised, though.
No, I'm pretty sure it's 95. Because you're right, it is like around the same thing as Chronicles, but I just don't know. Like, is it the exact same set list as Chronicles, or is it
no,
a little different?
No, it's different.
It's different, and that's... You're right. I am so wrong about that. August of 95. Way off. Mm-hmm. It's... Like it's like
glad
Chronicles,
I have all this useful
but,
info that's tied in my head.
I know wasn't the Italian was first. It was basic. That's why like there's so much Italian Renaissance out there.
Yeah, Italian's the first language that was printed.
Then,
they did it in
but then
Legends.
They released it in German and French as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Not that set. Titan Legends is the first set that had another language other than English.
Legends in Italian is a different connection. Yeah. But I mean, I think Renaissance they first released it in Italian, and then they released it in French.
Is there not Italian versions of like Fallen Empires of the Dark, which came out after Legends? That's so weird.
Yeah, it's something.
And was the Italian Legends also like released at the same time as the English version? It probably wasn't. I guess it was delayed.
I'm sure it was a little
bit
later.
I think it was a little later.
It's weird. Maybe they were gauging the market. They're like, oh, let's see what the Italians think. You know, just threw it out there, and then it took a while to figure it out. They probably really should have done it with a core set, which they did later. But anyway.
Oh, okay, so this is actually interesting. See, we do research live on this podcast. Mm-hmm. So actually, the German and French versions of Renaissance have more cards than the Italian version. The main reason, because Legends in the Dark were already printed in Italian. So it's not that it came out first. It's that Italian had Legends in the Dark already. And so then
they just picked a few
the German and French Renaissance includes cards from Legends in the Dark, whereas the Italian version only has Arabian Nights, Antiquities, and some Unlimited. Interesting.
Hmm. All right. Well, there we go. Learn something new.
They were figuring it out they back were. In 95. Oh, yeah,
they definitely were. They definitely were.
Like other languages. Shit.
But before we move on from like the pickups and brews section, I did get to play in a LGS event 2 weekends ago now.
Yes,
And I took the Rockfirst spin again, and you know I still think it's a very good deck. I like the changes. I think we talked about them last time, but man, I just had a bad day. You know, it's just like I did not play well. You know, I could kind of tell like I started off like 0-1, and I think I pointed to a mistake where I would have won the match. Then like won my second match against like a buddy. Third match played
got
some
in your head.
Yeah, third match didn't play very well. Fourth match won, so I'm 2-2, and then like a 3-2 could make it into this like top eight. There was like 17 people, and then like the final match was like the feature match because it was basically a win and in for both of us. And I just It was I was playing against Red White Slide, and Mike, you and I have talked because we both played the Rock recently. How hard it is to deal with large flyers for like the Rock, and it's a total pain in the ass.
Yeah, yeah. So I also played the Rock in the monthly, you know, with all the talks about Rager Rock, and my God, did I face a lot of flyers and realize that it's this like huge blind spot for the Rock. Like you're at the point where we only have like five removal spells in the standard Rock
six
list.
Maybe like two Vendetta, two
Vendetta,
two Diabolic Edict.
Sure, but the flyers in this format are like Exalted Angel, which is six mana.
Yeah,
or you were saying Eternal Dragon.
And that one comes back. You know, like that one's a pain in the ass.
Yeah, that's five mana, so it's just like
no, it's 7 mana to cast. Yeah. It's 7 mana to cast.
Oh,
five to cast.
Yeah.
Five to return to your hand. Yeah.
Five to return, yeah. Yeah. So you're not deeding that away.
No. It just comes right back next turn. What's, if you don't have any pressure.
Sorry, I was just trying to think. What's the gold card that has threshold of gaining like +3/+3 in pro? Some color? I couldn't remember if that's a
Mystic Enforcer.
Rock.
Mystic Enforcer.
Yeah.
It is 4 mana for a 3/3 pro black, and it gets +3/+3 and flying.
What are the two colors? Yeah. I'm trying to remember what
green white.
I used to love that card.
Oh, it's green white.
I actually played it in the very first pre-modern monthly back in December of 2018.
Yeah, that's a cool one.
Yeah, it's a cool one. I wish there was more of it. But I win a perfectly average 3/3 in this monthly, and I lost to Exalted Angel twice. Mm-hmm. like the matches hands down came to Exalted Angel. Like if that card wasn't in my opponent's decks, I would have won. And then I also lost to the mirror, and that's, you know, exactly how that goes.
Yeah.
It's like whoever draws the right cards.
Yeah, I also played it in the monthly too. So I played a lot of the Rock recently, and I just like I lost to like some like kind of weird decks and in my pod. I lost to the Battle of Wits deck that made the knockout stages. Cause like
Biggest Deckus.
I just like, you know, when I cast a Cabal Therapy against that deck, you're like, I don't know. Like, you have 240.
You're like,
cards.
It's not going to hit.
Yeah.
I don't care.
Yeah. It's just not going to do much. So, and I also think
So you could see from their top-down webcam that you were facing a Battle of Wits deck?
Oh, you know right away. Yeah.
The
tower.
I've got that recording for the win and in. I've got the Battle of Wits match.
Nice. Awesome.
I mean, the deck can win. It has every combo possible. Yeah. So, like, if things just line up, I just think that's just such a cumbersome deck.
I love that for the deck photo. He put the different game plans.
Brilliant. It was a beautiful deck photo. Beautiful deck photo.
Fantastic deck photo.
Yeah.
Just while we're talking about it, since we talked about the Rock mostly last episode, I mean, it is definitely a good deck. I think the Rager is a fantastic addition. It for sure came in handy multiple times. And I also played Histrodon. I'm still huge on the Histrodon. I think it's such a great creature for the Rock, for the same reason that Rager is good in the Rock, because it's like the deck's biggest problem is drawing the wrong cards. So anything that's going to get you drawing more cards is going to benefit you greatly. And that ended up being, though, the reason I lost. Was because I kept drawing the wrong cards. I had considered running, and I talked to you about this, Jared, running Diabolic Intent. And honestly, I think I should have, because there were so many. I mean, I was only going to play one copy. I was probably never going to draw it anyways. But even so, like, I just found myself in so many situations where I'm just trying to find the one card that's going to get me out of the jam, that's going to make me win the game. And if Diabolic Intent is my second copy of whatever card I'm looking for, then I think it would have been good.
That's a fun of one of. I mean, like, throwing that in there is not going to make it bad. You know, I think, you know, when you compare it to something like Living Wish, which is, you know, the same.
Yeah, I'm not a fan.
But it's two mana, it's card neutral. You know what I mean? It replaces itself. Right. Much like, but not Diabolic Intent, you're kind of down off a card because you have to sack a creature. But you get any card in your deck as opposed to just a, a creature or a land from your sideboard. So
yeah, I've played Living Wish in other decks, and I've just never been happy with the way it messes up your sideboard. I mean, I get it that you don't, like, devote all 15 cards to being one ofs for Living Wish, but even so, like, so many times I find myself going to game two and going, because I've devoted seven slots to Living Wish targets, none of my other eight cards come in for this match. And I kind of wish I didn't do that.
I can definitely see that. Yeah, I've not played with Living Wish basically ever, so I can kind of get that, which is too bad. But as far as just one other thing before we get off the brews, I did try to add Ragers to the red-black Draco Blast deck.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Results so far have not been good. because I was just thinking, like, you know, if this is the way to change, you know, mid-range decks, so you're adding something like Rager, right? Adding, like, if you're adding that into the Rock and then adding it into maybe Dead Guy, which Tom Matelski also did this month and has had success with Dead Guy Ale, which I think makes sense also. I think there's an argument there. I was like, why not do it the red-black version? You know, it's still, like, kind of the same thing. And I just think it's a different deck. You know, it's just might be less mid-rangey, because I don't think the red adds the mid-range value at the high end that white and green get in either Exalted Angel at the top or, like, Deranged Hermit as, like, you know, the kind of the winning cards. And so I think that's kind of something to take note of that I thought was interesting. So, it doesn't seem to.
No, it's.
But in theory, I liked it that it was like, okay, it'll draw you further into your Insidious Dreams. It'll replace itself. We'll see how it goes. But
yeah, no, it's interesting how red as a secondary color in this format is kind of the last on the list. Like, when you think about things you want to splash for,
Bolt or Terminate.
Things that you want to make your second. Yeah, exactly. Like Bolt and Terminate are the best ones in
Grim Lavamancer.
Red. Grim Lavamancer.
Then it's sideboard cards.
Definitely things to add, but then when you think about all the other colors and what they add,
right,
it's like it's so much better.
Like, for a mid-range deck, like, nothing gets better than, like, you know, something like Pernicious Deed, right? It has that card that just, like, resets the board, you know, however you want it. So that's huge. And red doesn't have that, and white doesn't really have that in Dead Guy Ale as a, you know, as an option. So I think it's just kind of fundamentally, like, you know, Pernicious Deed is the place for it in the Rock kind of versions that, like, you know, like you said, to get to your deeds, you know, with Rager or something like that. Also, Rager having a nice, like, 3cc, you know, kind of makes it so you can pop it and, like, you know, pop a deed. And usually you pop it for one or two, I'd say, for the most part. Like, it usually survives. So.
I'd say for the most part, yeah, you pop it for one or two. And that, surprisingly, was, like, really good for me multiple times when playing the Rock.
Yeah. I'm not saying
there were a couple of times
I'm not saying Ranger
where we
was
were
like
in top deck mode, right. And it was like just having that 2/2 body,
yeah,
and that can survive the deed for two actually won me, I think, at least one game, maybe two.
Yeah, I'm not saying Rager is like, you know, it's not an A plus card by any means, but like sometimes a B plus card that replaces itself is like what you need. And again, yeah. It's on the board and it puts something in your hand, so that's good. But yeah, so far I think I'm liking it.
And if you look at the top 16 of the current monthly, there's a couple of rocks in there and they all have Rager.
Yep.
So Lanny Wong, shout out. he did it. All right, so shall we get into the most important topic of the year, the meta analysis for pre-modern for 2023?
Yeah, I think you know, we do this every year, and I think it's good to kind of like see where we're at as far as what's being represented. We'll have to give a lot of credit to Federico, who posted a 2022 recap. And we normally do this in March, so like we kind of let things settle after a while. But so we'll take some of his analysis from the 2022 minigame, which I think took all the results from a TC decks. He broke it out to
all 40 plus players.
And then he might have done one even that had all of them, but we're going to look at the 40 plus players. So
yeah,
we thought,
so yeah, actually we should also mention, like, we're doing this a bit different.
Yeah.
The past 2 years, what we did was we just took TC decks and we just did the math and found the percentages of what was what share of the meta.
Mm-hmm.
We've decided, like, at this point, now that pre-modern has grown so much, but also since TC decks, you know, post pretty much anything they find, which is good, you know, we like that. But when it comes to putting together a meta analysis, when you've got all these smaller tournaments that pretty much everyone top eights, it doesn't really help with what's a competitive deck. We also kind of wanted to slant things towards the online monthlies and the IRL tournaments, which are kind of the big, more competitive things.
Yep.
So we're using Fede's 40 plus for 2022, and then Jared, big thank you to you. You put together the 2023.
Yeah. So what I did was I, again, used TC decks because that's our most consistent kind of resource for decks. And I looked at all the events that had 33 and over players. So I chose that number because at 33 is when a normal Swiss becomes 6 rounds. And as a 6-round group play is our standard for the online, I figured it feels like that's a bigger event. So I had to, you have to draw the line somewhere, and I figured that was a good place to draw. Now, your 5-round events at your LGS, fantastic. Like, you know, but we had to, but that could also just, a 5-round event at an LGS could be 17 people, you know, because that's where that cutoff is there for the Swiss around. So I think cutting it at 33 meant that we could kind of, you know, get the 6 rounds, which is equivalent to what we normally do for the monthly. Yes, we do group play in the monthly. I understand that. But again, just drawing the line somewhere. And that was our reasoning, which I think is fine reasoning. So we can assume that at least 6 rounds of Swiss or group play were played in all the events that we looked at. So I took those results. Whatever was up there, I basically posted. If it was a top 16, I put all 16 in there. If it was a top 8, it was top 8. And I put them in, and I would kind of put each deck. And I looked at the decks to make sure that they were what they said they were, first of all. And like, and I would, if they finish first, I give them a 1, and then like the next entry, if it's the same, you know, next 2, 3, whatever, wherever it finished. So also take it with a grain of salt that like someone that finished 5th is basically could be, if they had an elimination stage, which we don't know for a lot of these events, it could be 5th or they could be 8th, you know, depending on how they figured out the ranking, 5th through 8th. So I think what we took away was what made it to the knockout stages or what the top finishing decks. So again, this is a winner or a winner's metagame. This is not a metagame of every deck that's been played. It was just the winners of the top finishers. So these are the decks you should be looking out for, so to speak.
This is what you come to expect. And we are going to make sure that this is out before April 1st so that anyone who has last minute changes to their spring fling deck can maybe squeeze it in. So let's just one more thing
I want to mention. It's
yeah.
We had 14 events that we tracked. That's 3 month lease, January, February, and March. March, we do not have the final standings for yet because the limitation just started, but everything else was just what was available, and that's what I'm taking from. So there was 14 different events, and we had 176 different entries, but we just so that I could finish what we looked into.
Yes. So let's first, though, run through the 2022. Again, shout out to Federico. So tier zero, he has anything that was 10% or plus, and not a single deck was 10% or more. Tier one, which is 6 to 9.9%, we have Sly with 39, Goblins tied with 39, Elves with 30, Stifleknot, which is any version of Stifleknot, except Hermitknot, that is a different deck. Mm-hmm. So that was 25. Parfait was 19. Parfait firmly in tier one in 2022. Tide Control, 17. Also tier one. So interestingly enough, that's kind of the reason that we decided we need to make a separate 2023, because things have... You know, like the Tide Control was huge in the beginning of 2022.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like, was it January or I think it was actually December of 2021 that there were like half the top 16 were Tide Control decks. And so Tide Control was really a thing coming into 2022. And like I say, we kind of realized like we got to get the numbers on 2023 because things have changed pretty significantly in the past year.
Again, so just so anyone knows, that would be, this is how they showed up. The percentage they showed up was first was Sly, then Goblins, then Elves, then Stifleknot, then Parfait, then Tide Control. What Fede has deemed as tier one is like the top finishing, you know, giving his 6 to 10, roughly 10% of the metagame. In a finisher circle, and I think that's interesting. You know, that's to see what that ranking is. Like, you know, Sly being pretty, you know, clearly the deck that was most like that, and Goblins were being the two decks that were most likely to get you into the knockout stage.
Well, that's what's funny. They have the same amount of finishes. Mm-hmm. However, Goblins actually has 2 first places and Sly has 1. Mm-hmm. Goblins has 4 second places and Sly has 3. But when you go to third to fourth place, Goblins only has 2. Sly has 10 in third to fourth place. So that really shows like the consistency of Sly is nothing to be trifled with.
Yeah. And the other one to kind of mention in this tier one that Fede put out was that Stifleknot was in a similar situation where it had 2 wins. 4 second place, but 9 third, fourth. So, like, you're making deep, probably deep runs. And also worth talking about is the Parfait deck, which has 5 wins, you know, in that time.
5, number one. Yeah, it's the deck. Not only is it the deck with the most wins, not a single other one has more than 2.
Right. But also, I will say that I think a lot, 3 of those wins were everything Rich saying himself. You know, and the other 2 were Mark, what's his name? Van Aut from who won the European Championship.
Who won the back-to-back.
By the back-to-back with the same deck. So 2 very strong players, obviously. So I think that's one thing that we're going to look at and I'm going to mention as we go into the, you know, our update is that there's, you know, when one player plays a deck a lot, they get pretty damn good with it, and they show up a lot with it. So that was something to kind of keep in
mind. Mark-Eric Vogt.
Mark-Eric Vogt. Thank you. Right name. Yep. Thank you.
So that's the tier one. Tier 1.5 is 4 to 5.9%. We have The Rock with 24 places. Oath, which is, you know,
Parfait and Oath are
separate. So this Oath is either green, white, blue, or junk with 18. Stasis with 13, Enchantress with 13, Devourer with 12, Terrageddon with 11, Survival, which is either Tradewind or Rexxer, Feb being a different deck, with 11, Hermit with 10, and Dead Guy with 9.
I would like to say that I think I'm surprised at seeing Survival this high, just like non-Feb Survival decks that high. Mm-hmm. I think that's very, to have that many quote top finishes is very surprising to me. But like that could be like they're coming from small events, because I did not, we see something very different in the most recent.
Well, what's also interesting about his rankings, so when he puts them in the different tier categories, he's also weighting them towards first, second, and third to fourth place.
Mm-hmm.
So in the tier two, you'll actually have some decks with more finishes than the lower tier 1.5s, but the lower tier 1.5s had more top four finishes.
I see. Okay.
And the Survival actually had 5 third to fourth place finishes.
Okay. That could be what pushes it up. That makes sense.
Yeah. Which will make sense when I get to tier two, which is the 2 to 3.9%. Landstill is at the top with 15 places. And if you remember from 30 seconds ago, The Rock and Oath were both above 15 places in the tier 1.5, but all the rest of them, Stasis, Enchantress, Devourer, Terrageddon, Survival, Hermit, and Dead Guy, are 9 to 13 places. But because Landstill had the lower tops, I mean, I'm guessing that's why it's...
I'm just looking at this data. I'm not fully understanding it now, because there's
yeah, I'm kind of realizing that myself.
I don't know, but like we're just going to trust Federico had a reasoning, so he's putting that squarely in tier two, even though it has more finishes than a bunch of the tier two decks.
Yeah,
so I don't know if that's a mistake, but who knows? It could be higher average finishes or something with the other ones, but we'll see.
I think, yeah, it is what I'm saying, where it's the percentages of top fours, because if you look, Landstill only has 26% of top fours, whereas, like, Dead Guy, which we said only had 9 finishes, still has 44% of top fours.
Okay, I'm understanding now what these percentages mean. So it's a better conversion rate.
So Dead Guy has 9 finishes, and 4 of them are in the top 4.
Mm-hmm.
So almost half of the Dead Guys that made it to the elimination rounds made it to the top 4.
Gotcha.
Whereas with Landstill, only a quarter of them actually made it to the top 4.
Gotcha. Okay.
All right, we learned something new.
There we go. We finally understood the numbers. You know, you had to look at it for a little bit.
Yeah. All right, so let me continue going down tier 2, which is 2 to 3.9%. We have Landstill with 15, Feb with 12, Madness with 11, Reanimator with 9, Pitrack with 8, Dracoblast / Machine Head with 7, Solution 7, and I believe he considers the white, blue, red to be Solution.
Mm-hmm.
Astral Slide 6, Replenish 6, Psychotog 3, Turtle Splash 3.
Okay. Again, those Turtle Splashes were mostly in, you know, two people's hands. You know.
Yep. And interestingly enough, the Psychotog, there were only 3 finishes, but all 3 of them made the top 4.
Okay.
And I think Will Hurst was 2 of those 3.
Right, probably.
So then we have tier 2.5, which is 1.9. Yeah, which is, I think he got him backwards, 1% to 1.9%.
Mm-hmm.
Pyrostatic Oath, which had a first place finish and is the only one in this category that had a first place finish, with 6, Groatog 5, 3 Deuce / Zoo 5, Ponza 4, Mud 4, White Weenie 4, Mono Black 3, Prison 3, Pink Prison 3, Zombies 3, and Welder Survival 3.
Yeah.
So we're now at the point where you're seeing decks that, you know, people mostly play because it's either it's their particular flavor. These are no longer the type of decks that you're taking, thinking, I'm going to spike this tournament with this. I have played a number of the decks in this tier 2.5, and not a single one did I take going, all right, I want to win this month.
Yeah.
So I'm going to bring, like, whenever I'm playing Pyrostatic Oath, it's more like, I just want to get a Bloodfire Colossus into play. I don't really care about winning too much this month.
I think this tier is pretty much almost irrelevant. You know, the next one is irrelevant to me. The tier three,
even
which is
more less, so irrelevant. Yeah, tier three, which we don't really need to go 0.9 or less.
Yeah, it's just smaller stuff that you've seen in like once or twice. You've heard of the decks, but there's not much there. I would say the only things that are worth mentioning quickly are like Storm, you know, which we all know is a lower tier deck. The Alluren decks, which probably could be better than it shows. And what's a highlight? I don't know, like Fluctuator,
Zombie Infestation
deck. So, you know, they are functional decks, but they are not going to probably win you, you know, anything great. But if you enjoy that, then you enjoy that. So that's good.
Yeah, exactly. If you're really looking at the competitive decks, you want to look at tier 1, tier 1.5, tier 2. So that was for 2022, but let's keep it current.
Can I pick a quick bone?
Of course.
Okay.
Pick that bone.
I don't understand why you have a tier 1.5. Isn't that just the second tier? If you need to separate it? Why isn't that just considered tier 2?
1.5 is tier 2.
Yeah, and then
tier
2
is tier 3.
Yeah. What? Why are these half tiers?
Is tier 4.
What does that mean? I don't get it. Like,
I think it's because in general, you stop at tier 3.
Why?
And
call it tier five. I think there should be.
I don't know. Ask Fede.
I don't know. I don't get it. It's just like, you know, there should be a tier one, and like, what's up, like tier zero? Why is that just tier one? I don't like. I mean, I guess it's like clearly the best deck. I just that's not, numbers are weird. There should be whole numbers. I've heard people say like, oh, is this like a tier 1.8 deck? It's like, well, it's either tier one or it's tier two, you know? I guess you could say that, like, for a deck that's, like, is on the edge. But, like, you know, I don't get 1.5. Like, that just means it's just tier two. It's the next best. It's from the second group of best options, you know?
Right. I mean, how far are we going to go into these percentages?
I know.
I do understand the tier zero thing, because that's, like, I'm sure you've seen that, like, the standard ranking now. This is more for like video game gamers.
No, I know what you mean.
Where they'll have S tier.
Yeah.
And then after that, A, B, C, D, E, and F.
Yeah.
And so S tier is like, these are clearly the best.
Yeah.
You know, like the others don't really compare. So I kind of understand that, but it's funny to have a tier zero with nothing in it.
Yeah, I mean,
a literal zero.
Literally zero and tier zero. So I guess it's, you know, holding up its name. You know, it's doing what it's supposed to do, being by itself all alone. Tier zero.
Exactly. So let's go ahead and jump over to 2023.
Yeah.
The current year that we are in, where there is a tier zero.
Yeah. So, like I said, you know, this is, I think, 14 events, 176 decks. Compare that to what Fede had, which was, I think, he wrote it in there, 36 events. So we, obviously he had all of 2022, and I just got like the first 3 months of 2023 to deal with. So I, like I said, you put all the results we had available, put them in there, and a clear step above everything else, representing 12.5% of the winner's metagame is far and away Goblins. So it's just, again, this is 3 months. It's just how this new year started. People have responded to probably Mono Blue Stifle Knot or whatever, and chose this as their deck. I know in there was one monthly where we had five finishers in the top 20 or something like that in that monthly that had a Goblins list. So, I mean, that definitely spikes it, but it's been other lists. So again,
we've talked about that January Goblins crazy month, and that undoubtedly had a huge role in Goblins being so high this year.
But also it showed up in these other events that I looked at, and I will say that a lot of these results, I think six of these results, are the Magic Online Society. So I just kind of learned something new about how they run things over there. I didn't realize how they did it before, is that they do these, they call them semi-monthlies, where you have 2 weeks or so, excuse me, to play your six matches, I think it is, because they are six matches. I think it's six matches. And might be five, so I'm sorry I didn't fact check this ahead of time. But all these results had 50-something players in them. So you get a – then they figure out a point system based on how you finished. And then they have a playoff that combines your two finishes of the semi-monthly for that month where you can switch your deck, which is kind of strange. So I'm not really sure how it goes, but – these were bigger events that had a bunch of people, and I picked the top finishing deck. So I'm sorry if it's not exactly they played six rounds or whatever, or they didn't do an elimination stage, it sounds like, with these decks. But they must have had a good finish of some sort to finish in the top top 10, 12, or whatever it is that they get recognized in on the TC decks. So it's
– okay.
You know what I'm saying?
I was wondering, because you had messaged while you were putting all this out that the Magic Online Society, like, it doesn't make a lot of sense. Yeah. And so I get what you're saying now.
But if, you know, Tom and, you know, and all you, and Cyberpunker and all you guys can yell at me for getting this wrong. But I think, again, they do five or six, I think it's six, but it might be just five group stage matches. And then they get, like, points for their wins or whatever. And then they combine it with the other semi-monthly. So in March, they'll have two semi-monthlies that have 50-ish people because they're getting good turnout, which is awesome. I've had some people be like, why aren't you on Magic Online to play? I was like, well, I'm one of those, you know, guys that loves a Mac, and, you know, Wizards hates me. So they won't let me play. So anyway, but they basically – and then they get a point, and then they have a playoff where they can play a different deck than what they played in one of those two semi-monthlies. So –
okay.
It's kind of a strange system, but they're having fun, and I'm glad they're playing pre-modern, and they're enjoying it.
Yeah, exactly. Again, as long as pre-modern is getting played.
Somebody did well with these decks in those monthlies at some point. That's what we should know. So anyway, before we move on from Goblins, I'm sorry, but the other thing is that Goblins has four wins in this group. I don't know if we said that yet, but it has four outright wins out of these 14 events that we looked at.
Which is pretty high.
Yeah. It's very good. It's the best at conversion, and it also had the most wins of what I looked at over these first 3 months. So it is a step above everything else right now, according to this data. Yeah.
Yeah. No, Goblins is by far and away the winner, and, you know, I've been saying it for months, like, don't sleep on Goblins. It is such a good deck. It gets around so many other decks is, I think, why it's so good. So many decks that are incredibly powerful can't deal with go-wide strategies. Mm-hmm. So it makes sense that this would kind of be its time to shine.
It's also got a proactive game plan that makes you answer it or die, you know?
Right.
Which is a kind of important thing, you know, to have in a deck. And in fact,
yeah, it's huge.
The top four of this 2023 all have something similar. You know, if you're not interacting with it, it's just going to goldfish and kick your ass, you know? Mm-hmm. So that's something that it's a proactive game plan kind of metagame right now, or that's what's succeeding anyway.
Yeah, for sure. All right. So number two, Stifle Knot with 13 tops.
Yep.
Bringing it in at 7.39%.
So this would be our only tier one, given the percentages that Federico said.
Yeah, if we kept the same percentages. Right. So we had Goblins at tier zero. We have Stifle Knot at tier one. And then after that, we're down to tier 1.5.
Tier two.
Tier 1.5.
Killing me.
I'm kidding. Kidding. So Stifle Knot, yeah. I'm guessing most of it was mono blue. Do you remember?
There was some blue white. There was some, you know, I think that was the only really other version that showed up. But definitely it was
interesting because we were talking about how blue black seems to be the next best after mono blue, but I've seen a lot of blue white. Like, blue white seems to be the flavor of Stifle Knot after Mono Blue that people are going for.
I think people like its ability to play Source of Postures and also its ability to play Meddling Mage, which is amazing.
Pretty great.
So, like, that's really... Meddling Mage is good at disrupting your opponent and also protecting your Dreadnought, right? So, that's amazing. Totally. I think it's excellent. I think if you take... If you bring either one of those three versions, Mono Blue, Blue White, or Blue Black Dreadnought, I think you're going to have some good success. And I would think you should make your decision based on something like this metagame analysis, you know, depending on, or your local, if you know your local metagame really well. But I think that's important to know. Hard to know.
Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. So it had, like I said, 13 tops and a first place and 3 third to 4th places.
Yeah. I think pretty respectable.
Interestingly, neither it nor Goblins had a second place.
Yeah.
But, I mean, Stifleknot is, it sank a bit in 2022 until Mono Blue kind of revived it and brought it back. And I think the reason that it sank so much was because people were just like, okay, I got to be able to deal with Dreadnought. So you'd have a handful of sideboard slots that can deal with artifacts easily and cheaply. And so many colors have that option. I mean, you got Crumble and Naturalize and green. Red has a million ways to deal with a Dreadnought. Black, anything that destroys a creature as long as it doesn't say non-artifact. White, you've got disenchant effects out the wazoo.
Swords.
Really, yeah. Really, red is the only thing that, or no, red has all the artifact destruction.
Yeah, but it's not quite as good. You know, I mean, overload's good, yeah, but it's not main deckable though. You know,
like true.
Seal of Cleansing. You know, Naturalize.
But also, you run the pyroblasts in your board.
Yeah, but so like, but it's after the board
and the overloads. You're right. It's after the board. Yeah, Stifleknot's probably gonna win game one against mono red. But you have plenty of ways, and the overall point I'm making here is that Stifleknot is definitely a victim of being able to be easily disrupted by every color.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, once people kind of realize, okay, I have to be able to deal with Stifleknot, then it started to sink. But, you know, then the mono blue came around. And it was such a great adaptation that Stifleknot's back, baby.
Yeah. I would also like to say that, like, of these first two decks we've talked about, it goes to show, if your deck can't deal with turn one Lackey and can't deal with a turn two Dreadnought, I don't think you're competing. Or you've got to be faster, totally. Or you've got to be faster than it, which is hard to do with those two decks.
Really hard.
So you need to have a game plan for those two things, and if you don't, I don't think you're competing in this format.
Yeah. A turn two Dreadnought is a two-turn clock after that. A turn one Lackey is potentially 3 or 4 turn clock.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, if you can't deal with those, then you're not going to be winning a tournament.
it's like a lot of the decks that, like, you know, a Goblins deck could win on turn three if, like, with the God draw, you know, and no interaction, but it's more likely that it's smoother. It would be turn 4 or 5, probably, you know, where Stifleknot can, you know, win by turn 4, you know, on its 4th turn attack, you know, is going to be it. So it's probably one of the faster ones. I mean, there's some combos that are faster, but, like, you know, consistency is always a thing.
Right. And, you know, the main way you win is not by racing. It's by disrupting.
Yep, exactly. So next one.
Next one would be Elves with 10, bringing it at 5.68%. 0 first places, but 4 second places.
Yeah.
And that's a lot. And 1 third to 4th place. So, Elves, you know, a lot of people still consider it the best deck in the format. I don't know. It may be. It definitely, like, is limited by the fact that you have to have 4 cradles and 4 survivals in order to build the deck.
Yeah, it's
which
not cheap.
Cuts a lot of people out. But also, it is a surprisingly skill-intensive deck to play.
Yep.
Like, you would think, oh, you know, cast a bunch of mana dorks and then just start survivaling and win. But there's a lot of very strange lines of play that you have to do. You have to always keep in mind what, like, all right, I got a symbiote on the board, you know, so what am I going to save? What am I going to return? You got Quirion Ranger, which, you know, what am I going to untap? And, like, it's all, there's so many moving parts in that deck that I actually do think that, like, skill level does cut a lot of people out on top of the price of the deck.
I would also say, with these is that in these finishes, there's not many outside of the top eight finishes in Elves. Like, there's not like an 11th or 12th. There's like one 12th place finish on this. I think it's, you know, it is definitely a very strong deck. So, like, if you're going to finish, you could finish pretty high with it. So I keep that in mind, is that they're not just sneaking in. They're usually making some noise, you know, if they get into like a knockout stage. So that's pretty high conversion rate. Like, it's, you know, of the 10, you know, and you got five of those are making the top four. That's pretty good, you know.
That's really good. Yeah. And when you think about, like, all the finishes that I put up in those very large IRL tournaments,
yep.
You know, like, I think there were three in the European champions. How many were in the LobsterCon top eight?
None.
Was it just
but,
one?
But there's two right outside.
Oh, no elves. There's two right outside.
There's two right outside.
Because I know there were some big name players playing elves.
Yeah.
So I'm a little surprised that they didn't make top eight. Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, I mean, it is a phenomenal deck, and it definitely, you'll go deep if you're skilled at the deck.
You got to practice it. I mean, it's probably one of those decks that you can goldfish a little, but it's probably better to goldfish against, like, interaction, because that's what's important.
Yeah, for sure. So next we have Sly. Sly had 9, bringing it to 5.11%. It had a first place. It had a third to fourth place. I mean, it's Sly. What else can be said? You know, it's always in pre-modern. You'll never see it dropping very far below this percentage.
If I can just talk about this is worth talking about at this category, is that it's marked as having one win, but that is the most recent monthly results, and that it was actually Flynn Espel, who was the top seed. So I put that in as a one.
So
that's
not
necessarily an actual first place. And I didn't differentiate between Bobble Sly and Sly. It's the same basic deck, you know. So it's showing up that way.
Differentiating that.
We just wanted to get a little bit more data. So it's not precise, but it's something to consider that, you know, it did well. Now, having said that, is that Aaron Dix is currently in the finals of the February monthly with Sly. So it has a chance to get either a first or a second place on this board. So as that result comes in, and as results come in, I will update this. I might as well just keep this going until at least LobsterCon, and, you know, just kind of keep adding to it. So I'm going to have,
sure.
I might as well. I like spreadsheets and data anyway, so this is fun. but I figured it was just worth mentioning that it was, not an actual first place finish. It was just that he was the top rank. And we, like I said, it was just worth getting another big dump of data in here just to kind of see, you know, where things go. So this is subject to change, is what also worth saying.
Gotcha. Yeah. So, I mean, ever since we started doing this meta-analysis, I mean, Sly has always been one of the top decks. Mm-hmm. As we've called it before, it's kind of the fun police where if you're bringing a brew and you face off against Sly, you're like, well.
Can I deal
with
this?
There we go.
Yeah. It doesn't have a very high conversion rate for top finishes compared to the other three decks we talked about and the one right behind it. So that is something that's interesting. So it might get you knocking on the door, but it hasn't punched through in a while. So I'm hoping, you know, Aaron versus Tom is going to be a great final when that finally gets played, and it'll probably be played by the time that this pod comes out. But
for sure,
it's the Rock versus Sly, so that's kind of fun, like classic matchup.
That's such a classic pre-modern matchup.
Yeah. So just something to think about. I think if you're playing Sly, you got to be able to have it, you know, Stifle Knot kicks your ass, and Parfait kicks your ass. So be teched for it. I mean, I think you have decent goblins and elves matchups, and like I think the rest of the field you're pretty good against. But like Stifle Knot will smash you in the face, and you know, and so will Parfait decks when they gained 40 off of Ancestors Chosen. It's kind of hard to come back.
Yeah,
from that
one. Exactly. You're like, all right, GGs. All right. So next is Blue White Land still. Same numbers, 9 in the tops, 5.11%, but a lot more top fours. We got 1 first, 2 seconds, and 3 third to fourths.
Yeah, I was very surprised to see this this high, because I feel like this has gone out of favor.
We talked about it. Mm-hmm, yeah, Landstill seemed to have gone out of favor. Like, people switched out the standstills for tides, and then, you know, blue-white control, really, if that was your style, people have kind of switched over to Parfait. But no, I mean, it's blue-white control. You know, it's been a thing in Magic since the early days, and yeah, it hasn't gone away.
I know, like, it's probably pretty good against goblins. Like, the goblins versus blue-white lands, though, is just a kind of a fun matchup, honestly. It's just like classic. Yeah. Like, this is control versus aggro, and you know, yeah, and it's a really good aggro deck and a really good control deck. It depends, when does humility come down, when does wrath happen, you know, if it's, is it on, yes, time or not. But I know, like, goblins was, for example, was very good against the parallax versions of that deck, just because there was, mm-hmm, just a little bit less early interaction or something like,
right,
that,
a bit slower.
And so it's just something to think about, you know, just that I think right now the metagame prefers the more classic version of the control deck, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah. And you specifically made sure that they were blue-white land still, because we had talked about this.
Yeah.
Like, we're not talking general blue-white control. This is decks with standstill and with the man lands.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, I had to make sure they were land still, you know, like that you played it. I think there is another, there was a blue white control deck that had a top finish somewhere, you know, in a different event. But otherwise, I didn't see any other. There are some parallax stifle slash, you know, seal cleansing decks, but those are kind of different. Those are, yeah, a different category, and they're just recently popping up in a different shell, which I'm excited to talk about later.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that in a bit. So next is the Rock. Same numbers, 9, 5.11%. It had 1 second place, but no first or third to fourth places. That's, you know, going to change since Tom.
Yeah.
That's not the second.
No, I've put it down as a 1.5, which is as like the expected value of that finish.
Ah, I see.
So to speak, you know, because it's both. So that it represents, you know, Tom, and that 1.5 in the burn represents Aaron in the finals, because, right, that's the expected value. Gotcha. Like, it's either first or second. Right. So I put that in there, so it's not a first or a second. Right. So we'll see how it goes. But I think, and also 3 of these results are also new entries from this month in the monthly. So
the March month. Yeah.
We'll see if they make it in their playing games or whatever, and we'll just go with it. You know, as it goes. I think.
I think the Rock is kind of, it's always around. And with the latest innovation, it's, you know, a lot of people want to pick it up again.
Yeah.
Because it's fun. I mean, we talked for quite a while at the top of this episode about it. It's a fun deck for sure.
Yeah. I mean, as long as you like mid-range Magic, you know, if you like, you know, just kind of playing Magic, there's very few free wins with the Rock. You know, you need to make, mm-hmm, you need to play well to win, you know, and I think that is very rewarding. So, like, when I had a good month with the Natural Order version, I felt like I played pretty well, and I was rewarded with that. I had a good finish at my LGS, and I played well, and I was rewarded with that. So there's not many free wins at all. So that's something to consider.
Yeah, and I think you said it in the last episode, how it almost feels like you're playing limited, where you feel like you're playing magic.
Oh yeah.
it's not so much about like, knowing all the things as much as like, all right, this is the right play to make here.
It's fair. It's fair magic, but also I think you're doing. There's a couple of unfair things, and like, you know, the discard spells can really win you a game. Pernicious Deed is a complete, you know, board wipe, and so there's a couple things that are super powerful that it does do, and you know, I think it gets to play fun, you know, fun real magic.
Yeah. So up next, interesting.
Yes,
we hear you, Andrew. You're back.
Okay, good.
We lost you for a bit there.
The only thing I was going to say when I heard you guys talking Landstill, one of the big things I notice whenever I'm signing it, like new people are joining and I go in, and one of the questions is like, what deck do you like? A lot of the players will, a lot of the ones joining will say, I don't know what the meta is right now, or they'll go for their old tried and true. And you'll see a lot of people say Landstill, Stasis, Dead Guy Ale. You'll see specific decks listed, which they might not play, but it's probably the first deck they thought of. So there's a bit of a skew for those original decks, I'd say, that makes people play them in tournaments. Not necessarily because
people have the nostalgia.
It's the best, just it's they remember playing it and know what to do. Yeah. Then when they realize, oh, I have to update it for current meta, that's when you see them starting to change up their design. But
I also wonder how much of Landstill's
come in playing that.
Yeah, I also wonder how much of Landstill's popularity is the players that come from old school, like knowing that the deck is the best deck, and Landstill's the deck of this format.
Mm-hmm.
But the format is so different that it's not the same in terms of dominance. But I feel like, yeah, a lot of people go into it from old school kind of thinking like, all right, well, control is good. What's the best control deck?
People like control, people like control, you know, and they just want to play that style. And I think I said in a previous pod is that the best control deck usually shows itself up or rises to the top, and there's not many, like there can be many different aggro decks because they have different synergies, but eventually the best answers show up for the format, and they usually coalesce into one deck that it becomes the control deck of the format. So I think there's a couple different ways to put control in pre-modern, like a prison style as well, but it's definitely, if you want to play classic control, that's the way to do it.
Yeah, agreed. So interestingly, as we go to the next tier, maybe I forget the percentages, but we have Madness with 8 at 4.55%. And this is, yeah, your blue green Madness. The addition of Survival has been huge for it. Survival and 4 squeeze, I've noticed, is kind of the standard these days.
So I got to talk about this one too as being like, you know, a potential outlier. I think this is higher than it's represented because I did take 6 events from the Magic Online series, and Cyberpunker is well known to play this deck exclusively.
Always jamming it.
Yeah, and I think he always finishes in one of the top positions with it. So he's got at least 5, maybe all 6 of the 6 of the potential representations, and I think the other one is me from a monthly. So like, it might.
When you played the blue white green,
the blue white green version, I think is represented here. So I mean, take it for a grain of salt. I think you should know how that deck works if you're planning on going to an event, because it is fairly popular, I think, overall in the meta game, because a lot of new players will play, oh, Blue Green Madness was the deck of standard back in 2002, 2003, whatever, and they'll kind of like they'll go to it, and it's cheap to build for the most part if you don't have the survivals.
Very.
But I'm not sure this is representative of its actual power. I think it's a good deck. Don't get me wrong. I think it is. You can win an event with the deck, but I don't think.
I think it's a decent deck.
Right. It's this isn't the. I would not. You know, unless you play it all the time and know all the lines, I think you can definitely get better with it and increase your win percentage or win share. But I just take it into account that this is predominantly one player playing it very well.
Yeah. Totally. That makes a lot of sense, because I was shocked to see it this high. The next handful of decks, I think, are much better ones. But, Madness is definitely a thing. It was the first deck I played in pre-modern.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's overrepresented, as you said, for obvious reasons. So let's go ahead and go to the next deck, which does deserve this slot, which is Terrageddon. Same numbers, 8, 4.55%. It's got 1/3 to 4th place, but and now remind me, for Terrageddon, you're including both the 5-color and the Patrick Burt style?
If it had Terravor and it had either Cataclysm or Geddon, I kind of put it together.
I think that should both be Terrageddon.
They can be different decks with the land tax engine. So I can hear the argument, but I just, for simplicity's sake, they're kind of have a, how they gain their card advantage is different. Pat has kind of gone with the Weathered Wayfarer and, like, you know, non-basic lands that are, have utility kind of engine. And, you know, some other people go like more 4 or 5 color with a land tax Sporak engine, which are, I think are definitely can be different. But yeah, I just think I just put them together just for simplicity's sake. And again, Pat does have some good finish, but he's also inspired a bunch of people to play this deck, which I think is great. And I one thing, again, for the numbers to note here is that this has a pretty low average finish of the winner's circle. It's it has an average of 10.75 as a finish, so it's not finishing very high. Two of those are new results from the most recent monthly that have not played the elimination round, so maybe this goes up. But I think it's actually not – when it gets to an elimination stage, it doesn't seem to be doing very well. But I still think I think it's a cool deck. I mean, if you want to play green-white midrange, again, you want to play some very fair Magic, but blow up a bunch of lands and, you know, play Magic, then that's a good fine deck.
I love the deck. I love the deck style, and I find myself getting surprised by how good it can be a lot, because you kind of tend to, you know, you sit down turn one or two and you realize your opponent's on Terrageddon, and oftentimes I find myself falling into like, oh, I got this, and then next thing you know, like, they're just doing their thing and destroying you. Yeah, it's a really good deck. I think that the top decks, the reason it doesn't have a higher, you know, percentage for higher average, is just because, like, once you're facing off against solely tier one decks, the tier one decks can beat it.
Yeah, for sure.
So next we have Parfait, which I'm sure a lot of people would expect to find higher, but much like Elves, I feel like it's, you know, it's got the Mox Diamonds in it, so it's got the price keeping a number of people out. But we talked about play skill being an issue with Elves. It is so much more an issue with Parfait. Yep. Like, you have to be an incredibly good Magic player in order to be doing well with Parfait.
Yes.
I've said it before, this is a deck that I would never touch. Because it's just, yeah, it is not the style of Magic that I like to play. You kind of have to be able to think about what's going to happen 30 turns from now if you're playing Parfait. And that's not the way I think.
Yeah, me neither. Maybe it's my hole as a Magic player to not do that. But I think it's for certain people, you know, to play that style where basically you have one way to win the game and you just got to keep kind of going for it. You know, you just kind of, everything else is to stop the other person from doing what they want to do. Again, but classic control deck.
Really is such a good deck.
Yeah.
Is the problem. None of this is to take away from what it is. I think what we're saying here is that if this were not so much a numbers crunch and more of a, what is the power level of each deck? This would be right up in the top three, in my opinion.
Yeah, I would also say, like, you know, some, I was noticing the Misty Mountain Games just had their spring.
They did.
Their Spring Cup, yeah. You know, or this as BK called it, because I got a bunch of snow, the Snow Cup or the Snow Cone. I thought that was kind of funny. Yeah, so that just happened, you know, just the other day from when we're recording. And at the beginning of the show, they were like, you know, which deck do you think will win? I don't think I would pick a deck to win a tournament. I would pick a player to win a tournament, you know, and, you know, I would want to pick one of the better players in the room if I know they're on a good deck, you know, if they're just going to have fun and they're just messing around with some brew, then yeah, I'm not picking them. But I think the player means a lot more. And I think that you could say that about Magic most of the time. But, you know, again, it just the right deck in the right person's hand can be extremely powerful.
And who won the Misty Mountain game?
Magic Pro Tour Hall of Famer, Sam Black, you know. So
Sam Black. And what was he on?
He was on, like, basically a Parfait-style deck, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So if you want to pick a player and pick a deck, like, yeah, those having a highly skilled player on a Parfait deck, like, they're going to do great with it.
Yeah.
He was playing a slightly different version.
He was.
The typical Parfait is mostly planes, and he was playing one with a lot of islands for Gush, which is very cool. I wonder if that's going to become like a pivot for Parfait players. But yeah, I mean, it's just such a powerful deck. If you are planning on going deep in a tournament, you have to be prepared for it. You can't ignore Parfait.
I would also say, I was thinking about this just now. Do you think it's a deck that has free wins? I think it has strong matchups that are basically 90-10 matchups, but I don't think it still has any free wins. I think you still got to play the game. You know, there's not, I mean, I guess there's some oath things that could happen that lead to a free win, you know, but.
Then that gets us into, like, what do you really call a free win? Like, yeah. I would call a 90-10 matchup a free win.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah.
You know, and I definitely think there are certain matchups where Parfait is almost always going to
do. Yeah, I think a free win's where you just, like, you play some cards out and you just win the game, you know, where you, like, you literally just curved out. This is not a curve out deck, you know, it's basically a
no, it's never going to get that, if that's what you're defining.
Yeah, like a lackey into a siege gang that has a ringleader, and then you get the, you know, get the war chief off the top, like, that's a free win, you know, like,
right.
Or like the turn two dreadnought that's just not answered at all, like, you know, that's a free win. Mm-hmm. It's not going to have any of those, except for if someone puts out a turn one creature, then they oath, and then it's just like, yeah, I just gained 40 or whatever, and this game's over.
It's got a number of free wins when it comes to decks that just cannot hold a candle to its game plan.
That's true.
You know, like, if you don't have a fast enough deck where they can get the land tax scroll rack thing going, mm-hmm. then it's just like they're gonna find the ways to kill you.
Yep.
You know, and that I would consider a free win.
Okay.
Like, if you cannot stand a chance, if you can't take down Parfait fast enough and disrupt their game plan, then you're not gonna win against it.
Right. Okay.
All right, so next, Replenish, interestingly enough. Replenish has kind of been one of those decks that it's always been a thing in pre-modern, but oftentimes in the category of, like, we were talking about Madness earlier, where people play it because of the nostalgia. But really, in the past year or so, it's become more competitive.
I would also call this our first true combo deck on our tier list. Everything else you could categorize as like aggro, Stifle Knot, you could even consider tempo to some people. I can hear combo too, but Elves is kind of combo-y aggro, but, like, you know, Replenish is definitely a, you know, I would say just a straight up combo deck.
Yeah, it definitely is more so than any of the previous versions.
But yeah, it's putting up some good finishes. It's getting, you know, it's converting, you know, at an okay rate. I think it can do even better. I know it's been popping up in the monthlies more. I think it's a very strong deck that has a very proactive and, you know, it's doing some broken things, you know, very clearly doing very broken things.
And this is all very similar to the Mike Forrest list from LobsterCon of last year.
I think more, not quite so much. Like, I think he was playing a couple Swords main or something like that. But I would say it's more like, I don't know what I would consider classic Replenish, but just, you know, it's not Panda Burst. It's like, I would say,
right. You're not including that combo. Instead, it's more
Parallax Wave,
right?
Blue White,
Wave, Parallax Tide,
exactly.
Opalescence,
yeah.
Intuition, Attunement, all that stuff.
Because that what makes, I think, that deck better is that it can just play out its things too and win a game, right? So it gives you that. It can play a control version of it, you know, a bad Parallax control versions, but that can still be awesome, you know, because they can play 4-drop artifacts pretty good with all the, you know, the soul lands and stuff.
Yeah. Did you guys see the version that had three or four Squeeze in it?
Well, don't most of them have a bunch?
They go in and out. I'm not sure what the right thing.
Because I've definitely seen versions, with that they're full on like solitary confinement Squee as a way to, you know, hold off Sly or
Or Chuck.
That's kind of their way to deal with the extremely fast aggro decks.
Yeah.
What's interesting is that you can even call this a combo prison deck. It's essentially what it is. It's a prison element that, you know, locks the game from your opponent playing any Magic.
Combo prison, with elements of control even.
Yeah. Wild.
It's a very interesting deck. It's definitely one of those where you gotta have the brain for it. Because things start getting weird when you got Opalescence and Parallax Wave and Humility and all sorts of crazy things going on. Like, the rules can get out of control.
Mm-hmm.
So that's Replenish. Next we have Stasis 7. Same number as Replenish. And both of them had 2 third and fourth place finishes. I mean, Stasis, it's I feel like a lot more people have been playing it lately. Maybe everyone is over the whole lose your friends, play Stasis thing and just realizing like it is a good deck. Like, when you're abusing mono blue in that way, it is a very good deck.
My only thing is a PSA to all Stasis players, just say draw go. Like, just like the I don't know, just keep it going. You know what I mean? It's like, let your opponent take up all the turn because it's all on them, you know, because you know what you're doing. You're tapping, you're paying your one mana and you're saying go until maybe you play your Black Vice and lock them out, you know, and then bounce at the end of their turn. We know the play patterns. So the play patterns are fairly predictable, but at the same time, I think, you know, it still creates an incredible lock. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And like I say, like you're abusing Thwart and Gush and Foil, like, you're doing what the Mercadian block free spells were meant to do.
Mm-hmm. Very strong.
It's so strong. So next is Mud. And remind me, this is not only mono brown, but also Tinker.
Yes.
Mud?
Yeah, I just threw them both together. They're kind of doing similar things, you know. So
I think so.
Yeah. They're very similar. Well, I mean, the Tinker, you know, Welder versions also has the combo finish, which is just another angle of attack, which I think is great. And when you can get the Devourer and Altar of Dementia kind of combo on a whim, which is great. I do have a quick little story about this. So when I went to that LGS last weekend to play in that tournament, I pulled up in the driveway and this guy next to me got out of his car, ran right to his trunk, and I just hear him scream, "Fuck!" And I was just like, "Oh, okay, off to a bad start. Whatever, his day's going." Yep. And then I walked in the store, and then like a minute later, I heard someone say, "Yeah, I think Jared has an extra deck. You want to ask him?" And so this guy, the store owner Eric, came up to me and he was like, "Hey, do you mind if this guy Mike borrows a deck?" I was like, "Well, I have an extra deck and it happens to be the blue-red Tinker deck that I was considering playing because I want to get some reps with it. I think it's a really cool deck." And I think both Tinker and Welder are too powerful to not be like seen play in this format. They're just stupidly good, right?
I agree.
And so this guy Mike, he borrowed my deck and I was missing one card for it. I was missing a Karn. That I have one in my queue, but I didn't have a second one, and I didn't want to take it out. And I was like, I was going there. I was like, the chances are that he's going to have one, and I'm going to buy one. And the guy was like, I was like, it's missing this card. I was thinking about picking it up. He goes, "I'll buy you the card if I can borrow the deck." I was like, fine, that's a fair deal. And so he bought me the card, which is great. Which is, you know, it was like $20. Yeah. Thank you, Mike Plummer. And then he goes and runs the table, and like, you know, he basically won the whole event. I think he was undefeated in the Swiss, I believe. He loved the deck. I showed it to him, and he just was like, "I love prison. Like, I want to be the person having all the fun." Like, like he was like, "This is me." He had a blast with the deck the whole time. He was like, he literally, because he was just stepping his toe into pre-modern. I think he was a legacy and vintage player previously. He's like, "I'm going home and buying this deck." I was just like, "Great. I'm glad you had so much fun playing this deck."
So wait, that initial outburst was him?
Was him realizing he forgot
because
a deck.
Because he realized he didn't bring a deck. Yeah. Okay, that's
and
awesome.
I just happened to give him a deck that he like really enjoyed and understood how to pilot very well. And
that's awesome.
I mean, I think I showed him a few small things. I was like, do you know what this Devourer combo is? Because not many Legacy players probably know what it does.
You need to know this.
I was like, you need to know this. And obviously, like, just know that, like, you know, the Crocus Catacombs can bounce the City of Traders. Like, that's important. And, you know, so, like, I think he, like, swept the Swiss. And then we got to, like, the top four. And like, I had been knocked out. So I'm just waiting for this guy to finish with my deck. And the finals was, like, against the finals was getting late, and I had other plans that night, and they were basically like agreed to split or whatever, and I was just like, great, like I get to go home, and he got a massive amount of store credit, so he was happy. Mm-hmm. So and he had it sounded like he had a blast playing the deck, so that was great.
Wow, great to hear it. So yeah, Mud was six. Now we're getting down to five with Naughty Hermit.
Just about 3%
Spell Hermit.
Yeah, right about 3% of the winner's metagame. So again, deck, you should know what it does. You might face it.
Yeah. No, I played this in the December monthly, and yeah, it's an incredibly fast, very, very powerful deck. But you know, it's kind of a glass cannon. If you can disrupt it, if you can remove the ghoul, if you can prevent the hermit from activating, then like this deck has nothing else going for it, except for the Stifle Knot combo. But kind of same thing. If you can deal with a ghoul, you can deal with a hermit, or you can deal with a dreadnought. But yeah, no, it's a really good deck for, you know, against the unprepared.
Yep. Great deck, super powerful, free wins. There's free wins now.
Free wins. This one definitely has free wins.
Yes.
Yeah. So next is Oath. So I'm guessing that's non-parfait Oath.
Yeah, classic, like green white with Phantom Nashoba or something similar to that. You know, the non-parfait versions. Yeah, they're doing something similar than the parfait, but just obviously much different engine and what they're getting. I thought it deserved its own category.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, and Oath is another deck that like a lot of people just gravitate towards. Either they played it before or they just love the style.
And they also know Oath of Druids is a broken card that is they don't ever get to play anywhere else.
I mean, it's a broken card in Vintage, for God's sake. So
doesn't it always still amaze you how cheap that card is to buy? Like, I just like
it does.
Like that card,
absolutely.
I assume it's been reprinted, or maybe it wasn't on the reserve list or something.
I don't think it's really been reprinted much. I mean, maybe once or twice, but I think it's just the fact that it's maybe once, yeah. Well, isn't it? It's banned in Legacy. Pretty sure it's banned in Legacy. I don't think I've ever seen an Oath deck in Legacy.
Oh, it's definitely banned in Legacy.
Yeah.
Oh, it's absolutely.
Yeah. Banned in Legacy. So it's banned in Legacy, and you know, so Vintage is the only format aside from Primar in which it's playable. So
Printed in paper in. By the way, it's really annoying that Gatherer is so annoying that it includes its online printings as like a
sprint. I know.
That's stupid. Anyway,
yes.
Printed in Exodus, Vintage Masters, Tempest Remastered, which I think are both
online. Yeah.
And then a Commander 2016 set. So it's only had two printings. And one of them was a Commander set, but still, like, I'm surprised. Like, this is not a more expensive card. But again, banned in Legacy. I assume it's got to be restricted in Vintage, no?
I'm not sure. No, it's four of in Vintage. Wow. That's why Oath is a deck in Vintage.
Okay.
All right, so next is Dead Guy Ale. You know, your classic black-white mid-range. Same numbers as Oath. I mean, what can be said about Dead Guy that we haven't said about the other mid-range decks?
Worth noting is that both an Oath deck and also a Dead Guy deck did take down a first place in my data. Yeah. So worth noting.
It's pretty cool
that, you know, Gabe Farkas is excited that his Dead Guy took down in first place. But yeah. I've been talking with Tom Matelski a bunch about the Dead Guy deck, and again, he's cutting Dark Rituals. You know, we talk about slaying, you know, killing your sacred cows or whatever. I played it just the other night. And I was like, damn, this deck runs smoother. Throw some Phyrexian Ragers and like more cards that do things. And you know, I was kind of impressed. So. Again, mana base still an issue, but you know it's always going to be an issue with enemy colored pairs.
Exactly, enemy colored pairs, and you know the rock kind of benefits from having green, black, and white in particular. Like, yeah, that's a rough enemy colored
yeah.
thing. There's no real fixing aside from just whatever lands you put in.
But like Gerard's Verdict is a bad hymn to Torek, but it's still pretty good, you know?
It's so good. Like I think Gerard's Verdict is a very underrated card.
Straight up 2-for-1. 2 mana, 2-for-1, you know? And the colors are hard to hit, but like, you know, that matters.
The problem is the colors. Yeah, totally. Mm.
And sometimes getting that 3 life really matters.
It does.
Especially with the Phyrexian Arena out, you know?
Oh, it's a great card against Sly.
Yeah. Excellent.
Yeah, I was pointing out to one of the guys in my pod about that.
Oh, sorry. Go
ahead. Well, yeah, there was the it says target player and target cards, right? You can target yourself.
Yeah, so you can target yourself.
Yeah, so like mid game or something, chuck 2 lands, gain 6 life. That's huge for the deck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a play.
Huh. I never thought about that. Yeah, that is cool. So next, this is one that you had wanted to talk about, Jared. The blue-white actual solution deck.
Yeah.
This is not the blue-white-red angel deck.
No.
This is blue-white solution, which is actually the right thing for the solution.
Yeah, it's got a pro-red creature, you know, and it's just blue and white creatures that are good, like Mother of Runes and Melee Mage and Silver Knight and Exalted Angel, which might be the best finish, like, you know, creature finisher in like the whole format. Like that card can swing games huge. I really like this deck. This looks really cool. I don't normally play a blue white, like, because I don't play a ton of control, but something proactive but also plays a reactive game, and it also uses and can abuse the Seal of Cleansing with the Parallaxes and Stifle. Mm-hmm. So you could do some broken things that can flip a game, like wipe their entire board of land. So this is kind of how that Parallax, control deck has evolved. And I think it's pretty good. I'm excited to try it. I couldn't believe when I looked through my cards, I didn't own a single Parallax Wave somehow. I just don't understand that, because I know I definitely had 4 back in 2000. Where they went, I have no idea. But
and it's like a $7-$8 card.
Yeah, I found some cheap ones online for like $4. You know, some HPs or MPs, and I don't really care. But I also couldn't believe I only owned. I thought I only owned 2 Seal of Cleansings, but I do own 4. So I am glad to see that. At least, another card that I thought I owned like a billion of, but I just didn't have. But
yeah, if somebody needs waves, I think I had 4 because I was looking for them for a deck, and it was like, crap, I can't find them anywhere. So I got 4 more. So I had them handy, and then like within a couple of days, I get an envelope, and it's like, oh, they were out at a signing. So I was like, oh, I got spares now.
You got them back.
I got them back. Yeah, it was perfect timing.
No, I'm totally with you. Like, this is one of the decks that I lost to with the Rock because he drew freaking 3 Exalted Angels in game 3.
They're huge. That's a hard card to deal with.
Edict one. I was able to Cabal Therapy away another one. Or no, actually, he Factor Fictioned, and I made it a 1-4 split with the Exalted Angel. But he had one in his hand anyway, so he took the 4.
Okay.
I lost to Exalted Angel. But no, this is a very cool deck. I really like it. I think we're going to start seeing it a lot more because it's like you say, it's got the elements of Tide Control that made it really powerful. It's got those blue white creatures that are so strong, you know, like we were talking at the top about how blue white Stifle Knot is really big. I mean, Meddling Mage is such a good card in this format,
but also Silver Knight is good against, you know, 2 of the top 4 decks and burn and goblins. So like,
yeah.
And like a 2/2 First Striker is still just a fine card, you know what I mean? Like against a lot of other decks, you know, it's just a fine card. So I think, you know, when I want to give, you know, I've played it with it for a bit, but like BK, when he top 8 LobsterCon last year and he had it in like the blue, red, white version of the deck, you know, it's like that's probably a pretty good metagame call. It's a decent body on a pro red creature, especially in what is expected to be a lot of like, you know, red matchups, especially when they're 2 of the top decks, you know. So I think it's a good call. And I like it a lot. And Mom and, you know, Meddling Mage create some really awkward situations. And like you said, Exalted Angel will win a lot of mid-range games because it could just swing life totals huge. Every connect with that, 8 points, different. Poof, gone. Yep. You know? With just one thing to note for the statistics, two of these four results are the recent ones from this most recent monthly. So this is hopefully a deck to watch. It might be on the rise, and I hope it does, because I think it's really cool, and I probably will hopefully sleeve it up at some point.
Yeah, for sure. Super cool. All right, so that does it for our fours in the top eight. So now we have our threes in the top eight, starting off with Rift Slide. That's the red-white one. Everybody knows this. It is the red-white mid-range. Ton of cyclers. Dies to Armageddon. Mm-hmm. But still a really solid deck if that's your style, if you like cycling cards. It's very cool.
It's fine. This is in the, you know, it's only 1.7% of what I found, so it's, you know, it exists. No, the deck exists. I don't think you got to worry about, you know, facing it down. You know, if just know what it does, kind of thing.
Yeah,
next I think I have four sign stabilizers just in case.
Awesome. I don't think it even plays stabilizer, so whatever.
No. next is Devourer, which this actually feels kind of low. Hasn't Devourer typically been a lot higher?
I think it's the Devourer combo deck, the pure blue red one. It's or even the Oath version. I think it's suffering from a lot of, like, you know, hate towards Parfait, like with the, you know, naturalizes being main decked and stuff. You know, so I think it's getting some splash damage, and it can't beat Gaia's. You know, it can beat Gaia's Blessing, but like it struggles with some of these decks. So I think it's a purely good combo deck, but I think it is on the struggle right now because of other splash damage, because of the hate that's in people's main decks.
Yeah. Up next is Feb, which I believe I am familiar with all three of these tops because I've been in communication with them. Feb's still a really strong deck, but also really hard to pilot. I'm sure a lot of people just don't want to pick it up. But, you know, now we're firmly in the combo portion, where it's like you can have a deep run with combo, or you can just face off against all the decks that kill you.
Yeah. I think also, like, you know, maybe 3-4 years ago, we would have said this was a tier one deck, you know? It would have been at the top of people's list as far as it's doing something very powerful. And, you know, in the right hands, it's very it can just win a tournament. I still think that's true, but I think it's a very hard deck to pilot, like, pristinely well, and that you kind of need to.
Very hard, but also I feel like the top decks have now all figured out ways to handle combo decks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. And it basically doesn't do anything without Survival of the Fittest, so that's always a problem. Except for the new Hermit Feb versions, which are at least gives it a second plan, which I think is smart.
Which actually, I believe of the Feb finishes, two of the three.
I think you're right. Feb. I think you're right.
Yeah. So next is Psychotaur. Okay, so now we're at the ones that only have two. Should we just rattle these off?
Yeah, these are just like 1% of the meta gamers. I think we can put a little highlight on the second one there. If you want to just mention it, we'll just talk about it quick. Enchantress has two top finishes, and they're a first and a fourth place finish. So, which is quite nice. Not played a lot.
There you go, Andrew.
I think the deck is not played.
There you go. Great. You know.
Yeah, it was from last year. Yeah.
No, it was from this year.
Is 2023.
Oh, this is just 2023. Damn.
Yeah. So,
so we've got Psychotog, Enchantress, White Weenie, Zombies, Survival, Pyro Oath, and Taxrack Draco,
which are just brand new additions from this most recent monthly. So they could fluctuate either up or down as far as their finish goes. So
now, wait, Taxrack Draco. That's land tax.
Yeah, there's Draco. Yeah, Blast? We had two. The two finished in the top 16. Yeah, so it's a land tax scroll rack based engine that plays like two or three Dracos and like four explosives and not explosives.
That's pretty cool.
Erratic explosions. Yeah,
I didn't know that this deck existed.
Yeah, it's pretty. It's making us think. You know, this month. Well, so hopefully it makes a run because it's pretty cool. Like it's just a different way to do it. You know, yeah, it still has Insidious Dreams or whatever to set it up, but it plays like it might play a few creatures that are like White Weenie creatures or something, and then it just has this like again, I win.
And. Mm-hmm. Nice. Mm-hmm. And then just real quickly to rattle off all the one-ofs, we have Battle of Wits, Slivers, Dream Halls, Taxrack Aggro, Merfolk, Blue-White Control, Tide Control, Mono-Black Control, Rogue. What's a Rogue?
That was I couldn't even describe that deck to you.
Oh, you had mentioned this. Yeah, you were telling us the deck list and we were like, wait, these are all in the same deck?
Yeah, I couldn't even explain it to you. It's on TC Dick somewhere if someone really wants to go find this Rogue deck.
Balancing Tings, Esper Control, Patriot,
which is the Angel Make
Blue White Red Angel deck.
Angel Make Angel Face.
You know, there's only one of those, whereas there are four of the blue white one. That's a really interesting change there. Fires, Ponza, Reanimator, Slivers, Lands, and
Zombie Infestation.
Oh, Zombie Infestation. Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So those are all the kind of decks we were talking about before, like tier three, you know, like play them if you want to have fun, if that's your deck for sure. But don't expect it to be doing too deep of a run. Yeah. So just to kind of wrap things up, going back to the top, I mean, Goblins, Stifle Knot, Elves, Burn, Blue White Landstill, The Rock. They are kind of perennially our tier one. However you want to classify the numbers, I mean, these are the decks that we see all the time. I think Parfait should be included if we're just talking about power level. But like we said, it's one of those decks that you're not going to find a ton of people playing because either they can't afford it, or they don't have the skill, or they just, you know, it's not their play style. Mm-hmm. Like us. Yeah. So when you're going in, when you're putting together your Spring Fling deck, definitely be aware if you are playing to win, like these are the decks that you're going to have to be able to deal with.
Yep.
You're going to need to have a game plan against all of them. Or at the very least, maybe one of them, you can be like, I'm a dog to this deck, so I'm just going to hope to dodge it.
Yeah, I think that can be a choice because while Goblins is 12.5 of this winner's metagame, you know, you will see that in like an 8-round event, statistically speaking. But like you could hope to dodge Burn, you know, especially you could hope to dodge it. You know, it's something just by looking at these numbers. And I agree with you that looking at developing a more objective a more of like, you know, power level based, you know, tier system is definitely, you know, something to do. But that's really personal opinion based. And I would agree with you about Parfait being tier one deck. You know,
it's so hard. Whereas this, you know, we have numbers.
Yeah, numbers are fun. Like, and, you know, things showing up is, you know, is a number. You can say this is what it's showing up and this is in this rate, you know, and I think that's important to use because you can add your statistics from there if you know what, if it's a good or bad matchup. I'll keep adding to this as things pop in. I think it'll be fun. We should share the link in when we release the episodes, just so sounds people can good. Look at it. I'll just throw it right in there and just so people can enjoy it and just, you know, I'll update it as things come in and things might change, you know, so.
Yeah, I'm sure a lot of people will want to keep tabs on it. Yeah, and maybe like before LobsterCon, we do more of a subjective one where we just kind of like think about the decks themselves and their power level.
I already got a special guest lined up for that episode. Don't worry. We'll give you a tease like two months in advance. So our LobsterCon preview episode will be a big one. So
awesome, yeah. But yeah, no. As far as the current meta, this is where it is. This is where it stands. If you're playing pre-modern, be aware of these decks. Did you guys have anything else to say on the meta?
That's all I got.
Not for that. The only thing could think of adding at the end would be that if you haven't signed up yet for the Spring Fling, know that for the monthly, I'm off.
Yes.
It's completely just the Spring Fling. There's no April monthly. Hype. Yep. And you have to have your list in by 11:59 p.m., 59 seconds. As soon as it's April Fool's, he won't add you. Largely because of just the sheer mathematics and stuff they have to do to how they set up the four-person pods. So don't delay. Don't wait. Don't think, oh, he'll let him in like Andrew does. That won't happen. So get in now. As soon as you, if you're listening to it and it's not April 1st, run over right the second and sign in, you schmuck.
Yeah, exactly. Don't delay. Cool. So I think that's the main like tournament thing. But we have to give a big plug for everyone in the pre-modern community. I'm sure you are familiar with Tom Matelski. He is one of the top finishers of many, many monthlies, fall brawls, spring flings. He's been in multiple PSSs. Super cool dude. I think all of us are in personal communication with him regularly. And if you have not seen in the pre-modern groups, his daughter has some serious medical things. And so they've started a GoFundMe for his daughter, Mila Matelski. She needs some spinal surgery and insurance is not going to cover it. Thank you very much, American healthcare system. And so they're trying to get to $25,000 right now. They're just shy of $13,000. If you check, you can probably find links to it within the pre-modern Facebook group. I'm going to put a link in the show notes when we post this in our Facebook group. So, but if you need to try and find it, just go to GoFundMe, look up Mila's spinal surgery, M-I-L-A. And yeah, this is a community. We are all, even though there are thousands of us around the world, we are all very tight knit. And this is, of anything, something to come together for and help out. So be sure you check that out. Mila's spinal surgery on GoFundMe. And yeah, Tom is by far one of the coolest guys in this group of super cool guys who play pre-modern. So please help out if you can.
Yeah, definitely. I even shared this with my family members, and a few of them, we just gave a few bucks. And, you know, how can you not feel bad if about a five-year-old, you know, needing a major surgery that, yeah, for whatever reason, is not covered by insurance? You know, it just is ridiculous. So,
yeah, just reading it was so heartbreaking to hear about the things that she's had to go through. So please give what you can if you can. Yeah. Anything else?
I have a quick share. Just April 8th is the next pre-modern event at ELD's Time Out Games in Bellingham, Massachusetts, for any of those locals or anyone who wants to make the short drive. It's been five rounds each time with a top eight, so it's been recently, so it's definitely gaining steam. And yeah, I guess it's been good to see the community grow there, because I was there at the beginning of last year where there's just three of us, and now we're getting, you know, upwards of 20, so that's great.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Yeah, always good to see pre-modern growing. All right. Well, I hope everybody has enjoyed this episode as much as we enjoy talking about it. This is one of our biggest episodes of the year every year. And yeah, thank you so much for tuning in. And we will catch you next time.
Bye, guys.